Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
It is it's really a phenomenal time to be looking at the raw data of life.
It totally is. I mean, imagine for a moment that we could read DNA not just as a static code, you know, a rigid set of blueprints, but as an actual time machine.
Right, moving from just reading the letters to reading the history.
Yeah. What if we could translate the language of mutations into a highly precise map of history, allowing us to see exactly when our ancestors crossed paths generation by generation, thousands or even millions of years ago?
It completely reframes how we look at a sequence of biology, honestly.
So how could this change our understanding of everything from ancient human survival to how modern mosquitoes outsmart our insecticides in real time? And what really happens when we treat the human genome like a language waiting to be decoded by AI?
Those are massive questions.
Right, those are the questions driving our deep dive today.
We are looking at a fundamental reimagining of how we reconstruct evolutionary timelines. And the tool that makes this possible requires us to abandon a lot of the traditional math we've relied on for decades.
Today, we celebrate the work of Kevin Korfman, Nathaniel S. Pope, Melinda Melege, Aurelien Tellier, and Andrew D. Kern from the University of Oregon, University of Pennsylvania, and the Technical University of Munich, who have advanced our understanding of population genetics and coalescent theory.
Yeah, and to truly appreciate what this team has accomplished, we first have to talk about the core physical reality they are trying to untangle.
Okay.
In population genetics, there is this underlying hidden structure called the ancestral recombination graph, or ARG.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
If we trace any piece of DNA back through time, we are basically looking at a constant epic tug of war between two forces, right?
Right.
Coalescence and recombination.
Exactly. Coalescence is when two distinct lineages find a common ancestor in the past. So think of it like braiding the separate strands of a rope together.
Mm-hmm.
And recombination is when DNA is mixed and matched during reproduction, which frays those strands apart and sends them down different paths.
So that constant braiding and fraying creates this incredibly complex, multidimensional web.
Right. But the problem is, if we didn't have any mutations in our DNA, this entire web would be completely invisible to us.
Wow, really?
Yeah. The only clues we have to reconstruct this massive historical structure are the occasional mutations scattered along the genome.
And those mutations are essentially just smudges. I mean, it's like trying to rebuild a massive shredded family tree where you don't actually have the branches of the tree, you just have a few random smudged letters that survived a fire.
That's a perfect analogy.
And you have to use those to figure out exactly when people lived, interacted, and died.
Yes. And historically, scientists have used incredibly dense analytical math to try and piece those smudges together.
Sounds painful.
It is. For a long time, the standard approach involved Markov chain simulations.
Hmm.
Later, scientists developed something called the sequentially Markovian coalescent, or SMC. These tools allowed researchers to look at a single diploid genome, meaning an organism with two sets of chromosomes, like us, getting one from each parent, and infer how a population size fluctuated over time.
But relying purely on analytical math usually means you hit a wall. The second reality refuses to behave like a neat equation, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The math becomes impossibly rigid. SMC methods rely on predefined, explicit mathematical assumptions.
Like perfectly spherical cows in physics.
Right, exactly. As soon as you try to introduce real-world evolutionary complexities, like populations fracturing into subgroups, migrating, merging back together, or natural selection aggressively favoring a specific gene, the equations just break down under the weight of the complexity.
Because you simply cannot write a clean formula for the messiness of actual biology.
You can't, which naturally led the field to machine learning. If the math is too hard for humans to write, we usually hand it over to a neural network to figure out.
Makes sense. But deep learning has its own issues here, right?
Yeah, it hit a major bottleneck. Many researchers turn to simulation-based inference. The idea is to simulate a bunch of genetic data and try to teach a model the relationship between the data and the evolutionary parameters.
Okay, but how do you feed all that raw data into a model?
Well, to make it manageable, older methods, like approximate Bayesian computation, required compressing the raw genetic sequence into a few low-dimensional summary statistics.
Oh, I see. So you are basically throwing away the actual book and forcing the algorithm to learn solely from the back cover summary.
That's exactly what was happening. You lose all the subtle, high-dimensional context spread out across the sequence.
So what did they try next?
Then researchers tried feeding the raw sequence data into standard neural networks, like convolutional neural networks or CNNs, but they ran into massive overfitting.
Ah, they just memorized the training data.
Exactly. The neural nets would perfectly memorize the specific simulated evolutionary scenarios they were trained on. But applying them to new, unseen demographic scenarios in the real world was a complete disaster.
Because they weren't actually learning the underlying physical rules of evolution, they were just memorizing the test answers.
Right. So traditional math is too rigid, summary statistics throw away too much data, and standard neural networks just memorize the training set.
This perfectly sets the stage for the breakthrough we are diving into today. The researchers stopped trying to force the genome into statistical boxes and instead treated it exactly like a language.
They did. They drew direct inspiration from large language models, the exact same architecture behind tools like GPT. They built a model called CXT, which stands for Coalescence in Translation.
Okay.
It's a decoder-only transformer model, very much inspired by the GPT-2 architecture.
So what does this all mean? How on earth does a language model, which is built to predict the next word in a sentence, understand evolutionary biology?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, DNA doesn't have nouns and verbs.
It requires a brilliant shift in perspective. To an AI, a language is just a sequence of information with hidden contextual rules.
Sure.
TrekText is a relatively compact model, only about 10 to 20 million parameters, and it is trained on synthetic, simulated genetic data from a massive community catalog called SDD PopSim.
And the task it performs is the real magic trick. When a chatbot reads a sentence, its job is next token prediction, right? It guesses the word apple because of the context of the words before it.
Exactly. But CDX performs a task the authors call next coalescence prediction. Let's break down exactly how that works.
Please do.
The genome is divided into fixed size windows, say 2 kilobase stretches. The model looks at a specific pair of sequences, they call it a pivot pair, and its job is to estimate the time to the most recent common ancestor, or TMRCA, for that exact window.
Wait, let's pause there. It does this autoregressively, right? Meaning it looks at the historical timeline it just predicted for the previous window to help predict the timeline for the current window.
Yes, that is the core mechanism. It moves window by window along the chromosome because of recombination. The evolutionary history changes as you move along the physical DNA. So the model predicts the coalescence time for window A, then uses that prediction as context to predict window B, then window C, stringing together a highly fluctuating sequence of historical times. What's fascinating here is that Saudi's case doesn't use any explicit likelihood formula.
There is no hard-coded math telling the AI how recombination works or how mutations happen.
Not at all. It absorbs the grammar of evolution entirely implicitly through its training on millions of simulated worlds.
Wow.
To do this, the model takes continuous mutation densities and projects them into what we call a latent space, a multidimensional mathematical representation where the AI can find hidden relationships.
Right.
Crucially, it uses something called rotary positional embeddings to encode physical distance along the genome.
Right, so think of rotary positional embeddings, like giving the AI a GPS tracker for every single mutation.
Exactly.
It tells the model, hey, mutation X is sitting right next door to mutation Y on the chromosome. And that spatial awareness is vital because genes that sit close together are far more likely to have carpooled through history together without being split up by recombination.
Yes, so the model learns the grammar of evolution purely by paying attention to those spatial relationships of mutations.
So the AI has learned the grammar, but knowing the grammar is useless if you can't translate a real book. When they actually put this to the test, how did it perform? The speed alone seems to be a massive leap.
Oh, the efficiency is staggering. KeySakes can generate millions of TMRCA estimates across 50 haploid chromosomes, meaning single sets of unpaired chromosomes, in just 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Yeah, 5 minutes. And it does this on a single NVIDIA A100 GPU.
That is insane. For the heavyweight champions of the field tools like Singer and SMC plus Edu, which are the traditional algorithms researchers have relied on for years, calculating at that scale and resolution could take immense amounts of time or be entirely unfeasible.
Exactly. The researchers benchmarked TrekText against those heavyweight tools. In scenarios where the data was similar to the training set, Kligs match their accuracy perfectly.
Okay, but what about curveballs?
Right, the real test for any AI is out of distribution data. What happens when you throw a curveball and ask it to analyze a species it has never seen before?
Because different species mean wildly different population sizes, entirely different mutation rates, and totally distinct histories. A memorizing CNN would crash and burn here.
Completely. But during the project, a new version of the simulation catalog, BASIC-D PopSim version 0.3 was released. It contained brand new species the model had never encountered.
Like what?
The vaquita, which is a highly endangered porpoise, pigs, and brown rats.
Okay.
When applied to these unseen species, Sadiq's generalized beautifully. It didn't need any retraining.
Wait, none?
None. Mm. It accurately mapped the hidden coalescent structures just by relying on the implicit grammar it had learned. Both Sidix and the traditional tool singer vastly outperformed SMC++ in these curveball scenarios.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Mm. Clean synthetic simulation data is great for a lab test, but real-world DNA is an absolute nightmare.
It really is.
It is messy, sequences are missing, and sampling is uneven. I would imagine a language model might just start hallucinating data when it hits a blank spot in a real genome. How did KeyLexT handle empirical, physical data?
That is the ultimate test. To answer that, the researchers applied the model to data from the 1000 Genomes Project for humans and the AG1000G consortium data for the Anopheles gambiae mosquito.
Let's start with us. What did KeyLexT find when it translated the human genome?
They focused on individuals of British descent and looked at two canonical extremes of our evolutionary history. First, the LCT locus on chromosome 2.
Okay, the LCT locus.
Yeah, this is the gene responsible for lactase persistence, the trait that allows some humans to digest milk into adulthood.
Ah, a classic example of a recent massive evolutionary advantage. But just to make sure the mechanics are clear, why does an advantage like drinking milk change the shape of the family tree?
Well, when a mutation provides a massive survival advantage, like in early dairy farming cultures, the individuals with that mutation have far more descendants. Over a short period, that specific version of the gene sweeps through the population, replacing all other variations.
So it acts like a giant funnel. If you trace the family trees of everyone with that gene today backward in time, they don't go back millions of years in a wide, diverse bush. They all bottleneck rapidly onto that one single milk-drinking ancestor very recently.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And when Trext mapped the coalescence times around the LCT gene, it found a massive, sharp dip.
Wow.
The timeline plunged to under 10,000 years, perfectly capturing the physical signature of that recent selective sweep.
That's incredible.
But then, they pointed the model at the complete opposite extreme, the HLA region on chromosome 6, which controls the immune system.
Immune genes operate under a totally different set of rules, though. You don't want just one winning gene to sweep the population, because if a new virus comes along, everyone gets wiped out. You want as much variety as possible.
Yeah, exactly. That phenomenon is called balancing selection. Because variety is fiercely protected, genetic lineages are not pruned away. They are preserved.
So what did the model see?
When Christist analyzed the HLA region, it found roots that were astonishingly ancient, over 10 million years old.
10 million years. That predates the evolutionary split between humans and chimpanzees.
It does.
The model just looks at the smudged mutations and correctly identifies that this one tiny stretch of DNA has been stubbornly preserved since before we were even human.
It flawlessly identified these multi-peaked, incredibly deep ancient structures. It proved it could handle the extreme dynamic range of human history, from a 10,000-year-old sweep to a 10-million-year-old balancing act.
All right, human data is fascinating, but it is also highly curated. You mentioned mosquitoes earlier. The Anopheles gambia data has to be the true stress test for missing data and hallucinations.
It is notoriously difficult data. Mosquito populations are unimaginably huge, which creates very deep, complex genealogies.
And I'm guessing the sequencing data isn't perfect.
Far from it. The physical sequencing data is full of missing patches, and the sample sizes vary wildly depending on which country the mosquitoes were collected from.
What specifically were they tracking in the mosquito genome?
The RDL locus. This is a gene where certain mutations grant the mosquito resistance to a specific chemical insecticide called Dieldrin.
Oh, wow.
We are literally watching an evolutionary arms race play out in real time as these insects adapt to survive our chemicals.
And because it's happening right now, the time to the most recent common ancestor should look a lot like the human lactase gene, right? A very sharp, recent funnel.
Yes, and Atractus navigated all the missing data to map this out. It revealed a striking recent dip in coalescence times at the RDL locus.
Okay.
But the geographic resolution is what makes this incredible. In mosquito samples taken from Ghana, where the insecticide resistance is highly prevalent, the dip in the timeline was incredibly sharp and localized.
And in other places.
Well, in samples from Uganda, where the resistance allele hasn't taken hold, there was no dip at all. The ancestral timeline looked completely undisturbed.
So the AI was actually tracking the geographical spread of an ongoing evolutionary arms race just by translating the timeline hidden in the genome, and it didn't hallucinate when the data dropped out.
It did not. The researchers explicitly fine-tuned CXD to handle missing data masks. The traditional tool, Sanger, actually struggled here.
Really?
Yeah, sometimes got confused by the spotty data and inferred a dip in the timeline where there shouldn't have been one. CXD recognized the blank spots and maintained its accuracy. It also successfully looked deep into the mosquito's past, dating an ancient chromosomal inversion, where a chunk of DNA breaks off and reattaches backward to over 1.1 million generations ago.
So we have a decoder-only transformer that can map human immune history and track modern super mosquitoes all in minutes.
Yeah.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, what does the success of CXD actually mean for the future of biology?
It fundamentally proves that we can replace rigid, explicit mathematical likelihoods with attention-based sequence modeling. We no longer have to force reality into simplified equations.
Right, the AI just figures it out.
Exactly. By using simulation-based pre-training as an implicit prior, the model simply learns how evolution works. And as community databases like StetoPopSim grow to include more complex demographic models, this tool is only going to get smarter.
I always have to ask, though, what's the catch? Where does the model stumble?
There are a few limitations to be aware of. The authors note that in some extreme out-of-distribution scenarios, when the model is applied to something wildly different from anything in its training data, the traditional analytical tool, Sanger, is still slightly more accurate.
Even though it takes vastly more time to compute.
Right. So if you have unlimited time, unlimited compute power, and a truly bizarre organism, the old math might still edge out the AI.
Got it. Any other catches?
For now, yes. There is also a slight structural bias the authors notice when estimating within-population cross-coalescence rates.
Let's translate that. What is a cross-coalescence rate and why is the AI biased?
It comes down to how the model was trained on structured populations. Often, a species isn't just one big mating pool. It is divided into distinct geographic subgroups, or DEEMs. During training, the AI saw a lot of complex scenarios where individuals migrated between these DEEMs.
Okay, making sense so far.
Because it was trained so heavily on that complexity, it rarely saw examples of purely isolated single population dynamics.
Ah, so when you ask it to analyze a completely isolated group, it slightly misjudges the timeline because it's expecting a more complex migration scenario that isn't there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But the authors note this isn't a fundamental flaw in the transformer architecture. It is a fixable training quirk. You just need to tweak the training data to include more simple single DEEM examples.
When we think about the real-world impact of a tool like this moving forward, the computational efficiency feels like a massive hidden benefit.
Oh, the environmental and practical impact cannot be overstated. Traditional, heavy CPU-based likelihood methods take an immense amount of time and electrical energy to run. SynX uses amortized inference.
Meaning you spend the compute power once to train the model, and then applying it to new data is incredibly cheap and fast.
Yes. By shifting to GPU-accelerated amortized inference, we're saving massive amounts of time, electrical energy, and consequently, CO2 emissions.
That's amazing.
Green computing is becoming critical in bioinformatics. Furthermore, for ecological practice, the speed of CX means we can track selective sweeps almost in real time. We can monitor how malaria-carrying mosquitoes adapt to new chemicals with high geographic resolution as it happens.
To summarize today's deep dive, CXD reframes population genetics as a language translation problem, turning the complex patterns of genomic mutations into a highly scalable, accurate map of our evolutionary history. By learning the underlying processes from simulations rather than relying on rigid analytical models, it unlocks the ability to analyze massive, messy empirical datasets in mere minutes.
By looking at the genome not just as a sequence of letters, but as a sequence of historical events, we gain an unprecedented high-definition window into the past.
What does this mean for our ability to trace the evolutionary arms race hidden within our own genomes?
It is a profound frontier.
Yeah.
And we are just taking the first steps.
Oh. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
big screens, late night static hums. We read the genome like it's beat up drums. Every small change got a story to tell. But time hides deep in the patterns as well. So, we stack those windows way the SFS. Turn noise into signals we can actually guess. Let the sequence breathe, let the record speak. Chasing no beginnings in a data stream. Translate the drift with the long past glow. Commutations to the moments we don't see, we know. The distance back to when two lives were one. Map that hidden timeline. The decoder keeps walking step after step. Guessing next coalescence, holding its breath. Across new scenarios, it still finds a threat. With uncertainty singing in what it said. Millions of minutes turning fog into shape. Fine tune for the gaps where the data sets break. Not perfect in the wild, but it learns where it strays. A fast little compass through ancestral days. Translate the drift at the long past glow. Mutations to the moments we don't see, we know. Posterior light in the probability.